Hello and welcome, everybody, to another episode of the After Buzz podcast. My name is Nico Adjimmy, and of course, with me is Buzz Adams.
Hello.
No Joanna today, but that's all right because we got some interesting things to discuss. First up, how's your dog?
Good.
Sparky's thin.
Yeah.
Has he not been eating as much?
No, he still eats his food.
Yeah.
Every day.
He looks good. I mean, he looks good. I mean, he's just
he had a plate. He had friends over. Like four other dogs came over and played with him on Sunday.
Really?
Like he was like me if I had gone and exercised. He was like walking real slow. You could tell that he.
Oh, the day after, you mean?
Yeah, the day after. But he was in there with these young. One of them was only a 2-year-old, so basically a puppy. But
who brought them over?
You know.
I didn't know she has that many.
She does now.
All right. Well, let's talk about evolution.
And something I know about.
That one you do know something about. The platypus's evolution is mysterious. The duck-billed platypus was dismissed as an elaborate hoax for most of the 18th century or the time we even knew about it.
Well, during that time, there were a ton of hoaxes. People would just stitch parts of different animals together. I can imagine seeing a mammal with a duck's bill and webbed feet that lays eggs would have been a real head scratcher.
And a beaver tail. Males possess venomous spurs on their hind leg. Right. It's the only venomous mammal.
Yeah, platypuses are really unique.
Also, they hunt underwater with their eyes closed using electroreception, a form of detecting electrical fields generated by prey's muscle movements. Genetic studies have revealed that the platypus genome contains elements from mammals, birds, and reptiles, making it a living testimony to evolution's complex pathways across millions of years. The bombardier beetle and its chemical warfare. I found this one fascinating.
Does it involve, like, pooping or something?
Not pooping, but it actually has two separate chemicals stored in its bodies because it has to keep the chemicals separated because when the chemicals combine...
Oh, my God. It's like having a match in one hand and aerosol spray can in the other.
It's exactly like that. The resulting exothermic reaction creates a boiling caustic spray that can be aimed with remarkable precision at predators. The spray that it can release is 100 degrees Celsius or 212 degrees Fahrenheit, boiling water. And
who does the beetle spray it on? Other beetles?
It says predators, so I would imagine a bird maybe that's trying to eat it. Or
take that, motherfucker.
What makes this adaptation particularly extraordinary is the complex system of chambers, valves, and enzymes that had to actually evolve in the right sequence so it comes out like that. It's insane. It almost seems like it's a design solution.
Yeah. Directed by the invisible hand of evolution.
Right. I agree.
I mean, there's so much variety in the world, but it is all much more accurately explained by evolution than by young Earth creationism, old Earth creationism, any other.
Absolutely. And few creatures demonstrate evolution's artistic potential like the leafy sea dragon. This marine relative of seahorses has developed elaborate leaf-like appendages that serve no purpose for movement, but create nearly perfect camouflage among seaweed and kelp forests. Have you seen pictures of this? It looks like kelp floating, like swimming kelp.
I can imagine it.
It looks like swimming kelp.
It's kind of like there's a bug, there's an insect called a walking stick because it looks so much like a stick.
These ornate protrusions evolved through natural selection as individuals with more convincing camouflage probably survived predation at higher rates. It moves so slowly and blends so perfectly that it appears more plant than animal. I do every time I see it, I think that is not a fucking fish. Well, I guess seahorses aren't really fish either.
Are they not? Well, yeah, it doesn't look like a fish.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it would fall under. It's not a bug.
Maybe related to shrimp?
That's a good point. Yeah. The mimic octopus's multiple personalities. This was only discovered about 26 years ago. It's called the mimic octopus. It can impersonate at least 15 other marine species, including
by shaping its body in different ways. I've seen that on TV. I've seen that on National Geographic.
Including sea snakes, lionfish, flatfish, and mantis shrimp.
They can look like all of those animals just by squishing their
body around. And it mimics the movement patterns and the behaviors of that. And that's kind of impressive.
I'm pretty fascinated by octopuses. Octopi?
They're our friends. We shouldn't be eating. Would you eat octopus now?
Man, I love me some calamari.
It's not the same. No, that's squid. Squid are dumb.
Are they?
I don't know if they've...
It'll help me eat calamari a lot better if you say that they are dumb. I wouldn't want to eat an animal that's too intelligent. You know what I mean?
That's why.
I have a strict no...
Elephant.
Yeah, I have a strict no elephant policy. Same goes for... let's see, what else is a really smart animal? Chimpanzees.
No eating monkey brains.
Yeah.
Oh, ape brains. Would you eat whale? Whale? Yeah.
I don't know. Do they make a sushi out of whale? Because I've probably eaten it if they do.
All right, next up. The Venus fly plant demonstrates that plants can have really cool adaptations. Yeah,
except I got one out of a mail-in catalog when I was like 8 years old. And let me tell you, I'm shocked at how that plant ever survives. We would try, my brother and I, would try to put flies in its mouth. And we couldn't even get it to activate.
That's actually really interesting. Because I'm not talking about the fact that it eats, that it's carnivorous. I'm saying that the speed at which it can close its leaves, its snapshot, is about 1/10 of a second. It's one of the fastest movements in the plant kingdom.
And believe me, my brother Lee and I tried every way imaginable to see that in action. We got a dud or something. But that wasn't the only Venus flytrap I ever owned. I bought others and...
Same thing?
Yeah.
Maybe it was full.
Maybe it was full.
What makes their...
Also, does a Venus flytrap need flesh or meat to live, or can it just live from water?
No, I think it does.
It does. Well, all of ours died. Also, sea monkeys are nothing but tiny little shrimp. Teeny, tiny little shrimp.
Do Venus flytraps need flies to survive? Interesting. It says, not quite. Venus flytraps don't need flies to survive, strictly speaking. They are carnivorous. In nature, when they're in nature, yes, to thrive in especially nutrient-poor soil, insects give them the vital nutrients they can't get from the soil. But in captivity, like a pot at home, if you water them properly,
they don't need they
give
don't
them need sunlight.
Blood. That's what we were doing wrong, watering our plants. Also, I know this is an interesting fact. All of the Venus flytraps in the world are kind of congregated in one spot. I can't remember if it's north or south, but I think one of the Carolinas.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, what makes it super interesting, too, is Venus flytraps, they don't have muscle fibers. So how do they close their trap? Well, it turns out that they have a sophisticated...
I wouldn't know. I haven't closed my trap in 30 years.
That's a good point. It has a sophisticated pressure-sensitive triggering mechanism and a hydraulic system that rapidly changes the fluid in the cells. They're using hydraulics, basically. That's weird.
I think the fly in its last moments is like, man, what a disappointment. I'm getting eaten by a plant.
No! I think of, you know what really grossed me out is the fly that landed on Beetlejuice's grave in the first Beetlejuice.
I can't remember that.
Okay, because you know how he has the city laid out. The Alec Baldwin's character has a model city.
I remember that.
And Beetlejuice is in the cemetery, and the little fly lands, and he like grabs it, like, and like, come here, let me get over here, and starts to eat it.
Well, how big was the fly compared to tiny Beetlejuice?
Big. But you don't see Beetlejuice because he's in the ground and like his hands come up through the ground.
Grabs the fly
and brings it inside. That's kind of a weird scene. Mm-hmm. All right. Last but not least.
I tried to watch Beetlejuice 2, by the way.
How was it?
I couldn't follow it. Like, I just could not follow what was. It was partially my attention. It never grabbed my attention. And even when it did, I couldn't figure out what was supposed to be going on.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, you get to hear what you want. This is a dealer's choice. Do you want to hear about the mantis shrimp, the immortal jellyfish, or the pistol shrimp?
I mean, immortal is a pretty provocative word.
That is a pretty evocative word. So
it's a jellyfish?
Sure. Like, you've seen how adult jellyfish look, right? Like the orb on top and the tendrils.
Definitely on SpongeBob SquarePants, because he goes out with a net to catch jellyfish.
That's called their Medusa form. Okay, because they start as polyps. They start as like tiny little things that will grow.
If you look at one directly, do you turn to stone?
That's funny. I think it probably, the Medusa thing is how all the tentacles resemble the snakes.
Wow, the snakes in Medusa's
hair.
Okay, all right.
But they've developed an evolved biological loophole to conventional mortality. When faced with starvation, physical damage, or environmental stress, the jellyfish can revert to its mature Medusa stage back to its juvenile polyp stage.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of this before.
In this process, special cells will start to turn into the older cells, effectively allowing the organism to restart its life cycle.
And by older cells, ironically, you mean from their younger life stage.
Stage, exactly.
So, does anything eat jellyfish?
I think there are some.
Like, jellyfish can die, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, they're not immortal, and like, if they're physically damaged to a point of like not surviving anymore. But it does change our understanding of aging and demonstrates that evolution can find a way around that. So, maybe we could figure out how to get our cells to revert back similar to how it has specialized cells. You could look like a baby Buzz.
I feel that's kind of what I'll look like when I'm 80 or 90.
A baby Buzz, yeah, anyways.
Yeah. Wearing a diaper and drooling and no hair.
Another one I thought was really interesting was electric eels. Like, anything that can produce its own electricity is fascinating.
Well,
how do
people get jellyfish stings? Because in SpongeBob, again, I'm going back to my primary source on ocean life, the jellyfish release an electric charge. Is that how it works? Is that what their sting is all about?
I think.
Or is that?
There are multiple species of jellyfish. So the immortal one that I'm talking about are not the giant jellyfish. These are ones that are about 2 to 5 inches. Like this big?
Yeah.
Then there's man of wars, which I think are from the jellyfish family, but not technically considered jellyfish. Okay.
I wish there was a peanut butter fish. so that the peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah,
you could mix them together.
Did you know roughly 80% of an electric eel's body has special cells that each cell is a tiny battery of its own? And when they work together in series, like adding a bunch of batteries.
Wait, are you saying cell as in on the cellular level?
On the cellular level. Each one of its cells acts like a battery. So when all of its cells get to put, it's like getting a bunch of batteries and putting them into series, and you get one giant shock from all the batteries.
I wonder what an electric eel shock feels like.
Have you ever been electrocuted? Well, you don't do a lot of like wiring or electric stuff, but...
Have I ever been shocked?
Yeah. Oh, you have all these things that will shock you.
Yeah, but static electricity, does that count? Is that what it's like?
No, they usually hurt.
It's harder.
Yeah, it says 600 volts.
Do you know what most of my knowledge of electric eels comes from? Or
SpongeBob.
Eels in general? No, you would think that. Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah.
Hear that sound, Highness? Those are the shrieking eels. They always get louder when they're about to feed on human flesh.
None of these might be. You know what this one is? Not in. Mike, our engineer Mike is in studio. Thank you for being here, Mike.
Hey, guys.
Did you text Mike?
No, he was just right there.
Oh, cool.
I'm glad he just waved me in like something was broken.
Sure.
No, nothing broken. But we need your expertise on electricity because, I mean, he's essentially an electrician in a way.
Yeah, I don't think that applies to bioelectricity.
But he could tell us how much, because, okay, we're talking about electric eels. And Buzz was saying, I wonder if it really stings. I was telling him, they generate about 600 volts with a 1 amp current.
Okay, gotcha.
So what would that feel like?
So here's the deal. A tenth of an amp can kill you.
One-tenth.
One-tenth of an amp.
And we're talking about how many amps?
One.
One amp. I'll tell you this. One amp right now, you feel it. You definitely feel it.
It's enough to stun or kill the prey or predators.
But maybe not something as big as a human.
Maybe not, but it would shock you for sure.
If you have a heart condition or if you got a pacemaker, you're out of business.
Also,
I wonder if anybody's cause of death has been listed as electric eel.
That is a fascinating question, and I will do that.
That'd be a good way
research.
To go, though. I'm not going to lie.
Just so it'll get shocked?
Yeah.
Like if I was on death row, I could ask for a death by electric eel.
Death by electric eel, yeah.
Okay, the weird thing about this adaptation is that electric eels are able to put out this voltage and amperage without any insulation, despite living in a conductive environment. Also,
that's what I was wondering. If you get shocked underwater, isn't that like getting shocked while standing in a puddle of water?
Yeah, right.
Times same a difference. Million?
Yeah, same difference.
Yeah. Well, also it says that the eels can double the output of their voltage by curling their bodies around a larger prey. So it kind of understands how putting it in a circle, like a, you know how like a copper wire, if you put it in a...
So it's kind of the way a transformer works.
Right.
You make a coil there, so the inductance actually doubles or however...
How many turns do you make on a coil, right?
So more coils, more voltage.
That's a fascinating
that's
evolution.
That's not how a transformer works. A transformer works by looking like a car and then changing into a robot.
Right, and then saying Autobots assemble.
Yeah, Autobots assemble. Everyone knows that.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the After Buzz podcast.
Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for listening.
A pleasure.
Appreciate it. Talk to you all next time.